Welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Perlman. My guest is mixed media sculptor and painter Jane Dennis. Dennis grew up in Delaware, where she attended the University of Delaware. In her early 20s in Ithaca, she got involved with the Ithaca House, a gallery and publishing house where she participated in talks that taught her to value the arts. She was the Ithaca Festival artist in 2000. She was part of an exhibit at Elmira College in 2014 and had an exhibit of multimedia works called Clothing on Adventure at Found in 2013. She has been a member of State of the Art Gallery in Ithaca for the last 6 years. And welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Now, tell me, you were first interested in theater in high school, you say, but you decided to major in art. So what was it that made you segue into art?
I loved the magic of theater, but I didn't like working at night with a group of people. I wanted to be able to work on my own. And I just thought, well, maybe I'll major in art. So it felt like a whim at the time, but I think my subconscious was leading me in the right direction.
Yeah, yeah. Well, did you have any idea what kind of art you were interested in? Had you already been pursuing some of it?
Not really.
Really?
I just started taking art classes and gravitated towards my printmaking class and sculpture class.
And so, you know, when somebody studies art, you probably have to try everything, right?
Yes.
Try painting and drawing. But you ended up liking sculpture, huh?
Yeah. I wasn't very good at drawing, so.
Well, that's a good reason to segue into a different facet. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
And I realize now that I love working with materials. So sculpture was a natural fit. And the printmaking is, you know, it's more physical. And you're making a plate and then printing from it.
Yeah.
So you don't have that direct connection with paper.
Yeah, and you probably don't have the freedom to be creative, too. It's kind of a process that you have to go through with printmaking. Is that true or not?
No, it's pretty creative.
It can be, huh?
But there's something mechanical about it. I love the press and etching. It was just interesting.
Yeah. Well, you say that you found the Ithaca House when you were in your 20s, and it taught you the value of art. What were some of those conversations? How did that sort of gel for you at that time?
Well, Ithaca House was a gallery, art gallery, and they also printed poetry books. It was run by Sherry and Baxter Hathaway. And every Saturday morning, we would gather in the gallery and sit and have coffee. And there was a group of regulars, but there were often extra people who came in. And they talked about art, and they talked about poetry. And these were grown-ups. I was just a kid, really. Uh-huh. And they still loved what they did and were very interested in it. I can remember Baxter talking about meeting Dylan Thomas once.
Wow.
And A.R. Ammons, Archie, he was a regular. So it was a lot of fun and very interesting. And they treated me as if I were a real artist. I didn't feel like a real artist, but they acted as if I were.
I think other artists know that. Yeah, emerging artists have to start somewhere, right? I
mean, yes.
So these were people that were already successful, had some form of, you know, real publishing and real exhibits and stuff. So how interesting that must have been for you.
It was fascinating. I didn't say too much. I mostly listened.
Oh, yeah.
But I learned a lot. I learned attitudes about the arts. And I guess I felt a little, I was searching at the time, what am I going to do with my life? And they made me feel as if, yes, art is worth pursuing. They're still interested. This is still valuable to them. And I want to be like them.
Wow. So you started pursuing sculpture. And do you remember when you were ready to start showing your stuff to the public and perhaps pursuing an exhibit for the first time? How did that transition happen?
Well, that was at Ithaca House. Sherry saw my work and said, would you like to have a show? And I felt honored, scared.
Yeah.
But they were so supportive that it seemed like a good thing to do.
So you were already, you know, not embarrassed or scared to show your work to some of these already already established artist, which that's part of being an artist, don't you think?
Yes, I was too naive to be scared at that point.
And what was your first exhibit about? Was it multimedia? Did it have a theme?
It was prints, and I think they were mostly abstract.
And do you remember what kind of a reception they got from other than the people at Ithaca House? Did the public come in and see them too?
Yes, and I think I sold a couple of them, which was great for me. I didn't have much money at the time, so it was really wonderful, and it felt validating.
Oh, bad. Yeah. God, that must have been so exciting. The thought of selling your first piece sounds so exciting to me. You know, because that means, I must be on the right road, right?
Uh-huh.
Didn't it?
Yes, yes. Little did I know.
You know what I'm also interested in? You did this project creating giant puppets for the Ithaca Festival.
Yes.
Tell us about that. You said that they were so big it took several people to carry them. How did you create something like that? What were they made of?
Laurel Guy was the director of the festival at the time. And she said, can you make two giant puppets for the parade? I want one to represent rock and one to represent water, because that's what Ithaca is, rock and water.
So that was the theme, huh?
And I said, sure, thinking, how am I going to do this? So they were made with chicken wire and wood and cloth, and I think some plaster. They were very heavy, and it took 5 people to carry each one in the parade.
Wow.
But people love them. One of the great moments of my life is when the parade came to the intersection of Cayuga Street and State Street, and there was a huge crowd on the sidewalk, and they just cheered for us.
How cute.
I felt so good because I had made something which people loved, and I was with a group of people that I liked, and we were doing this together. It was really fun and exciting.
Were these puppets representational? I mean, did they really look like people, or were they abstract?
Yes, they had heads and arms and hands. So each hand was held by one person because it was so heavy.
Wow. What happened to those puppets? Are they still in existence somewhere?
No. The deal was that they would be burned on the lake at the end of the festival on Sunday at Stewart Park. And
ritual sacrifice for your first big puppets.
So they were set up on a barge. And Alex, the man who started the Rongo, knew how to set things up so they would burn. And he did it, and we burned them out in front of the crowd at the lake.
Well, that was an art piece in itself,
yes,
right?
Yes.
How interesting. I wondered what happened to him. Now, you also have a piece called On Being Human, which stems from your son who works in Homeland Security, and you wanted to know about immigrants and their lives. And so tell us about that.
Okay. The piece is called Weaving the Future. And the show it's in at the library is called On Being Human.
Okay.
So there are several pieces about On Being Human. I was asked to put a piece into it, and I thought about, what does it mean to be human? And I thought, well, the stories we tell, I think that's what's most human to me. And I have a piece that I created for a group of pieces about immigration. And the reason I got interested in it is because one of my sons works for Homeland Security. So I was hearing what it was like working at the Mexican border and just things about people coming into this country legally and illegally that I didn't know before. And sometimes I use art as a way to understand something. I did a piece several years ago about the Electoral College because I didn't understand that. So I had to read about it.
How timely.
Then, yes, and figure out what is the Electoral College? How does it work? So I wanted to understand immigration. And I did several pieces, but this one, I wanted to collect the stories of people who lived in Ithaca who knew who their immigrant ancestor was. So I asked people I didn't know, I asked people I knew, and They mostly knew of an immigrant ancestor, which sort of surprised me. I mean, this is meaningful to me, who my great-great-grandparents were and where they came from, but I didn't know if anybody else felt that way.
Oh, yeah.
But they do. They know. And there are little stories. I didn't want to use any last names, and so I just used first names and dates and a little something about them. Like one person said her grandfather made bathtub gin in Syracuse when he came to this country. Or maybe it's her great-grandfather. So it was interesting.
And what were the art pieces that came from these stories? What name? Tell us about one of them, at least.
Well, the piece that collected all the little details from various people who contributed it's sort of in the shape of a big squared off O, and I used paper to make each little icon. And then on top of it is a ship made out of letters, because I was thinking that many people came to this country on sailing ships in the 19th century and never went back and never saw the people they left behind again. And the only interaction was with letters going across the ocean back and forth. So I thought about that, and it was a compelling image to me.
Yeah. Oh, that sounds so interesting to me. I understand why Americans are interested in their relatives. This country doesn't really have a theme like, you know, Italy. We think of the canals and, you know, I mean, it's so spread out with so many immigrant cultures that people are looking to see where they came from because, you know, they're looking for a culture, it seems to me, don't you think?
Yes, yes. And it's a story, too. Mm-hmm. In everyone's family, there is a story about someone who made a giant leap.
Oh, I know. Can you imagine the bravery of those people doing that? That's what.
Yes.
You know what I'm interested in, too? You say you use many different materials in your works, you know, metal, canvas, plastic, found objects, and so on. So do you think of an idea first and then go out and look for the stuff to create? Or do you have a big drawer full of stuff that you've created through the years and think, oh, I'm going to use this in this new idea? How do you do that?
Yes and yes. I do all those things.
And where do you find
sometimes,
all this stuff?
Sometimes I start with an idea. I want to understand immigration. I want to do a piece about the immigration stories.
Yeah.
And that causes me to think about, well, how can I do this? What materials can I use? And I'm very interested in connecting different materials. So that's part of the puzzle of it. I want to put paper with screen on a piece of wood. How do I do that elegantly? I love it when I make connections that are visible. I don't like glue. Sometimes I use it, but I prefer it to be sewn or nailed, something that can be seen.
So you want people to see the process in some ways.
Yes, yes. Ah. And I want it to look hand done. I don't want it to be too fancy and polished. I guess it's my retreat from the beautiful graphics that computers can produce. So I'm trying to go in the other direction and cover that field.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Jane Dennis. She's a mixed media sculptor and painter, and we're talking about her work. You know what we were just talking about, that you don't want it to be too polished? It sounds like you want to show the human side of an artist, you know? I mean, the work is human, so it's not perfect, right?
Yes, yes.
So therefore, how do you know when it's finished?
I don't. It's finished when it has to go to the show, and sometimes it comes back and I add to it. I get to a point with things where I can't see anything more to do with it. And that may be that's my level of expertise at that moment. So I wait, and sometimes in 6 months I look at it and say, oh my goodness, why didn't I think of this before? And I'll add to it or subtract part of it and use it on another piece. Oh, this part is good, this part is not so good.
Oh, so you're constantly refurbishing and recreating in some ways.
Yes,
wow.
I cannibalize myself.
If you sell stuff, do you go to people's houses and say, hang on, I'm not sure if that paint, that thing you bought is ready for prime time?
No, because people are discerning. They usually pick the good ones to buy.
Uh-huh. So you know that those are finished ones,
yes,
too.
Yes.
So how do you decide when to put color and paint on? A lot of your work is very colorful. How do you decide when to put color and paint in these almost half-done objects, it sounds like to me?
Generally, I start with color.
Ah.
I have colors in mind. Color is a language to me at this point.
Yeah.
When I was young, I thought, I want to understand color. I don't understand it, but now I do. So it feels very much like a language, and it speaks to me. The piece speaks to me about itself in a sense as I add color to it or take the color off it if I've done it in a way I don't like. And I look for it to sing. That's the word I use. Is it singing yet?
Wow, so. That's great. So you, the piece sort of tells you what color it needs to be.
Yes.
That is fascinating.
I spend more time looking at things than I do actually building them.
Okay, that makes sense to me. That makes sense just in regard to being an artist, yeah.
Yes.
You said in your bio that you had to adjust your beliefs about art in order to keep working. In other words, you said, show up and shut up is one of your mantras. Tell us about that. Did you reach a point where you struggled about whether you wanted to continue being an artist, or is that something that happens every day?
It doesn't happen every day now, but it's very easy for life to intrude and to question, what's the point of this? Mm. Why should I do this? And I made peace with that by stopping myself from judging the work. So showing up is just showing up. That's obvious. You just have to show up 6 days a week, preferably, even if it's just to look at something.
Hmm.
Just keep it there in your head.
You mean you show up at your studio?
Yes.
With the intention,
yes,
of making art?
Yes. And shut up is more difficult. Shut up means silencing the inner critic so that I can just work. It's so easy for artists to get caught up in, is it good? Should I keep doing it? Are people going to like it?
Yeah.
And I finally decided, that's not my job. My job is to make it, not to judge it. Plenty of other people will be willing to do that.
That's a wise decision. I wonder how many artists have to come to that conclusion.
Yeah. And I figure I'm someone who was built to be an artist, and I should practice that.
Yeah. Oh, that's a wonderful thing to know about yourself. God.
Yes.
Now, you say that you pay attention to mistakes because those are the pieces that tell you where to go next. To tell us about that, it seems to me mistakes sometimes stop people in their tracks.
Yes, and they shouldn't. The mistakes are when you're reaching beyond what you're able to do. You're reaching past your skills, you're reaching past your concepts, and you can fall on your face.
Mm.
That's a good thing because it tells you where to go next. It tells you which skills you're interested in. I tried to do this. I couldn't do it. It didn't work. How can I do it? And conceptually, I think about the concept behind the piece, the story behind the piece. Is there enough to it? Maybe it's too skimpy. Maybe it's too trite. But push it.
Mm-hmm.
Look for the surprises.
Yeah, are you looking for honesty, too? Because sometimes people think, oh, I'm going to create this to make this point, and it's not really you or something. Are you looking for an honesty to come out in your art, or is that even a consideration?
Oh, I'm not very good at dishonesty.
Uh-oh.
I never have been.
So that's not even something you even grapple with. It's, you know,
not much. It's too hard. It's much easier to be honest.
Oh, God, pass that along to the world, would you please, Jane? I want to talk about your experience with State of the Art. It's a collective, you know. Has that enhanced your work as an artist? Because you talk about how you need to be solitary and, you know, that's why you didn't want to do theater.
Yes, it has. It's wonderful. It's a wonderful group of people, very sensible and interesting. And within that group, we have a group that meets once a month, and we call it the meaning group, the meaning of art group. It came from someone saying, I don't know what the point of this is. I don't know. What's the meaning here? So he said, we need a meaning group. So we talk about things, and it's really interesting to hear how other people react to having a show, how other people react to feeling like their work isn't going anywhere. And so, and in within that group, I've learned a lot.
So is it kind of a support group sometimes?
I guess so,
yeah. Who are stuck?
Yeah.
So. Yeah, I've often wondered if these collectives end up being competitive things. You know, I've known people who've had to quit book groups because everybody's kind of jealous. Somebody got a contract and, you know. but this sounds like it's much more of a supportive, let's help each other kind of thing for the most part.
I think they're very supportive. And they're very sensible about making the basic decisions for the co-op.
Yeah.
So that's great.
So it has enhanced your artwork.
Yes,
as far as you can tell, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's push, too, because there are many opportunities to show.
You know what I want to ask you, too? Since that first show that you had when you were really young and, you know, you couldn't believe you got an exhibit, how has your experience been with showing your work, you know, in the last 10, 15 years as an adult, as a serious artist? Do you get nervous? Do you listen to people? Do you worry about criticism?
I don't worry too much about criticism. I like showing because it pushes me in the months beforehand to really work the body of work I'm doing and make it as good as I can make it at that moment. And I like the connection it brings with other people. And when you have a show, you can connect with people who like art, people who come to see your work and talk with you about it. And that's great.
Yeah, so you find that an enriching experience.
Yes, very.
Oh, that's very great. Tell me how you come up with titles for your work. To me, titles are important. Some artists say they don't like to put titles on them because it gives people a conception that they don't want them to have. They want people to decide for themselves what a piece of art is. How do you deal with titles?
Well, my feeling is that people have different roots to their beings. And for some people, it's words. For some people, it's images. So I do put titles. And I want them to be interesting and sort of descriptive, give someone a jumping off point. Because I'm trying to reach the people who are maybe not as visual and more word-oriented.
Mm-hmm, so that'll pull them in.
So it'll pull them in a little bit, give them a clue as to what they're looking at.
Okay. So you don't have that philosophy that let them decide for themselves what it's about. You have intentions.
Oh, well, they it anyway, which I love. I mean, visual art is open-ended.
Oh, it is. And people bring their own experience and, you know, somebody could be horrified by a piece or comforted. Yeah, I understand that. Yeah. You must have seen it over and over in some of your exhibits. You know what? There's a piece that you did called Identity that I found really interesting. It's kind of, it looks like a Monopoly board.
Yes.
It's almost like the beginning and then there's no ending on it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I love that.
So someone had a show in the Clinton House when Cap was there, and it was called Identity, and I was asked to participate. And I thought about it, identity. How do I describe my identity? And I thought of a game board. It seems as if my identity keeps changing. And I thought, oh, Monopoly, it's like I'm gathering hotels, the hotels being parts of my identity over the years.
It felt like the game of chance, too.
Yes,
which is what our human life is.
Yes, and I put chance and choice where the cards would be on the Monopoly game.
Yeah, I found that. That's a very compelling piece to me. I found it really interesting. You also have one called Moon Jump, and it's just this little white body in these, you know, it's almost like cubist squares and circles. And to tell us about that one, too. It almost looks like a lost scene.
That came out of wanting to use leftover materials. So it's pieced together. The canvas is pieced together. And I wanted to put something in there that was figurative. And I used copper. So it has this feeling of this person falling through this abstract painting.
Yeah, it looks like Escher's cubist works in the background, too. It's really, that's a beautiful piece. I love it. And the Moon Jump figure looks ghost-like.
Yes.
Which I really like. It reminds me of our lives, you know?
Yes.
People, we were lost in space. You know, and art makes it, tells us that it's an abstract world like that. Now, do you believe art in times like these especially is important to bringing in political issues and so on? Or are you somebody who doesn't think artists should dabble in politics, at least explicitly?
I love to do political pieces. Mm. And I think for me, looking at art, other people's art, looking at my own, it creates a kind of altered state in me so that I can escape some of the hardship of the world and keep my balance.
But do you see yourself doing some political art, especially in this climate that we find ourselves in now?
Oh, eventually. I can't do it right now. Yeah. But eventually I'll process what's going on now and do something with it.
Well, what are you actually working on right now? I know you've got an exhibit coming up in Florida early in the year.
Yes. And the title is Sharp Edges.
Mm.
So I'm showing with two other people who do work with metal, with found metal. And I am working on pieces which have metal I've picked up on the road, you know, like the piece of a muffler or something. And also roof flashing, which is sheet aluminum. My husband's a builder, and when he tears off a roof, he will bring home the flashing, which has holes in it, tar on it, and I love working with it.
So. Only you, he probably thinks. Only my wife would want an old piece of tar with holes in it.
I know. Some men bring flowers. He brings flashing and roofing materials.
That is great. So you're working on this new exhibit, and we will look forward to whatever you create in the coming year. I'm sure you're going to have many subjects. Can you give us some contact information? We are almost out of time.
JaneDennisArt@gmail.com is probably the best way to get me, and through the State of the Art Gallery website.
You can find her.
I'm on that.
Well, that's great. Well, Jane, this has been such a pleasure to talk to you. This was really fun. Again, I've been talking to Jane Dennis. She's a mixed media sculptor and painter, and she's a member of the State of the Art Gallery, so you can probably catch her down there at some point if you would like to talk to her in person. Jane Dennis, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Our audio producer is Nate Richardson at Rep Studio in Ithaca, New York. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega, and we are a sponsored project of the New York Foundation for the Arts. Tax-deductible donations are welcome at artspire.org. That's artspire.org. And visit us online at outoboundsradioshow.com. I'm Tish Perlman. We'll be back next week.